tracking. So, first I'll give you a sort of generic picture of non-interactive crypto computing as it applies to the settings that we're going to be talking about most often. So you have two parties, A and B, and A wants to distribute computation of some function f to B. And there's a lot of different models for crypto computing, but sort of the thing that we'll generally be studying is A will send some encrypted values, encrypted inputs to the function to B, who provides his own inputs, his or her own inputs Y, and then does some computing on encrypted data, computing on the encryptions along with the inputs, and comes out with an encryption of the function evaluated at X and Y. And I mean, so in our case, this is going to be an encryption in the same system as X, but I mean, that's not generally the case, but that's usually the model that we're going to look at. It'll become clear when I talk about the examples in more detail, but this is just to introduce the idea at a high level. Homomorphic encryption and crypto computing sort of go together naturally. It's a primary tool for a lot of crypto computing protocols. And why is that? It's pretty obvious. So if f is a function and a is some algebraic structure, and additionally, f can be computed just using the algebra of a, and if on top of all that the algebra of a is preserved via some homomorphic encryption scheme, then you have a natural, easy way to non-interactively compute f. Okay. So the question that we're going to try to ask, is what crypto computing functions can we implement using known homomorphic crypto systems? So we have a sort of limited number of algebraic structures that are preserved with homomorphic encryption, and we'd like to investigate what limitations does this put on us using things in sort of a generic way. Again, it's that's going to be the focus. In some situations that I'll talk about, it will actually have a good bit of meaning. But at a minimum, I think what people should take away from this is if you approach some crypto computing protocol that you'd like to implement, this talk will give you some simple criterion to sort of compare it to. And if it meets the criterion, you can at least rule out a huge number of algebraic approaches to the problem and know that you need something else. That'll become more clear later. Okay, but more generally, we're going to just be, the question in the background is sort of what can be computed with algebra. Apologize, these are terms that are made formal, but I don't have time to make formal here. In an algebraic setting, here's a couple of examples we'll talk about. So one is something, a private database modification, it's like peer writing. So, well, I have slides for exactly what that is. Another one is homomorphic peer protocols, and this is a term that I think I may be the first person to use it, but it's, again, something that's pretty natural to ask for. I have a slide for that, too, in a second. And also, I don't know how many of you were at Rafi's talk yesterday, talking about private keyword search. The same methods we have here will apply to that as well. So algebraic private database modification, it's just a really sort of natural, obvious thing. So you have a user and a database. The database holds encrypted values, and the user wants to modify one of the encrypted values without revealing to the database anything about, well, computationally, anything about what modification took place. So the algebraic part is that it's all going to happen in some algebraic structure. So the database elements are going to be elements of some algebraic structure. The description that's sent over that tells the database how to modify it is also elements of an algebraic structure. And then, you know, additionally, the function that the database uses to update itself is, again, algebraic. And again, I'll make this more precise soon. Okay, homomorphic peer. We already have a couple examples of homomorphic peer protocols. So what I mean by homomorphic peer is that, so in general, the returns of queries, so So for example, just the original protocol for a computational single database prior information retrieval by Kuchelewicz and Ostrovsky, at the first level, they sent square root of n encryptions in some homomorphic scheme. The database were all elements of the group, you could look at it that way. And then the database computed some algebraic function on the query, and it was some algebraic function that depended on the database. And what was returned was encryptions, homomorphic encryptions of database elements. So that's what I'm going to mean by homomorphic here. And then also at the end of the paper by Vinay, Goh, and Nassim, they also introduce a peer protocol that has this homomorphic in the way I've described. But additionally, so it has another, like it has a nicer homomorphic property really than Kuchelewicz Ostrovsky, in that the query returns were was just a single encrypted value of exactly the database element that the query corresponded to. Okay. Finally, one other question that we study with respect to computing with algebra. So I'm not sure how familiar people are going to be with this manuscript, since it is a manuscript. I don't know that it's published anywhere. So there's a paper of Sander, and he proved the following thing. If there exists an algebra of the homomorphic encryption scheme over the ring Z-Mach-2, then there exists, it's equivalent, if and only if there exists a homomorphic encryption scheme on the symmetric group of seven elements. So you can see that the non-abelian groups have, you know, far more computing power, in fact, sort of complete computing power. I think the main point of this manuscript was to introduce a crypto system on a non-abelian group, and I think something went wrong with it, and that's why it remained only a manuscript. But they asked the question, it might be hard to read, so I'll just tell you what they asked for. What's that? Yeah, exactly. But they asked about, so the method they used, you know, they sort of had a nice way to stick F2 inside of S7, and they asked what other groups can you sort of embed F2 into. And I have a nice answer for that, but I think it may very well equate to some things that have already been done. But it's a different approach. I think it's interesting.
Question, you know,
yeah. What's the question? What does it say? Oh, so they note that SM is the smallest symmetric group in which you can embed PSL32. PSL32 was the original way that Ben Orr embedded F2 into PSL32. And then, so...
PSL32, do you mean theoretically you have C's over F2?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And do you need PSL or SM?
Oh, I mean... No, I guess it doesn't need to be... Does it have a center? I don't think it has a center. I think it's all the same. Oh, right. But I mean, if it has no center, then they're the same structure anyway. So I think. Well, just they wrote. I copied this exactly out of their paper, so I guess we'll just stick with what they said. What's that?
Non-trivial center.
Non-trivial center. Yeah, exactly. I mean, of course, everything has a center for sure. But yes, not an interesting one. Okay. So they embed that into the symmetric group on seven letters. So then they, obviously they have a representation on the symmetric group in seven letters. So then they can, if you had a homomorphic encryption scheme over S7, then you could perform all the operations of SL32, and therefore, yeah.
Maybe that's really the basic question, but by homomorphic encryption scheme, you mean encryption functions are homomorphisms on the algebraic structure?
So the way that's sort of a tricky question. I think generally the best way to describe it is that decryption is a map of groups that's actually homomorphism. And then encryption is sort of a way, provides you some way to sort of uniformly at random pick things from the fibers of decryption. I think that's a good way to look at homomorphic encryption. But I mean, it doesn't have to be that way, but that's the nice way I like to think of it. So, but yeah, encryption is not going to be a homomorphism in general, because if we want sort of semantic security, it has to be non-deterministic, and then, I mean, it's not even a function in the mathematical sense. This won't be too important. I really want to move on to the other main, more important thing. Okay, so what we can show is that we can sort of embed F2 into any simple non-abelian group. And so it's equivalent to producing a homomorphic encryption scheme over a But more to the point, the thing I want to focus on mostly is sort of a family of negative results in the form often of lower bounds. So we're going to study the algebraic structures that we have preserved by existing cryptosystems, and then we're going to think about a specific problem just in terms of algebra, and show, well, the property is hard to say in words at this point, but I'll get to it in a minute. We'll show sort of a simple property that can't be accomplished with what we have in terms of algebra in existing cryptosystems. And then that will lead to an algebraic point of view, impossibility, well, lower bounds for some of the protocols that I was just talking about. Database modification, homomorphic keyer, and keyword search. Okay, I'm going to just sort of move through the first result because I think I will be short on time, and well, yeah, and I don't think it's a huge consequence also, but it is interesting. If you have time, I would hope that you could please come talk to me about it. I think it's a lot of fun, but it's not.
But this is the last book, right?
That's true. Okay, at the end, yeah, at the end, yeah, yeah, yeah. At the end, if anybody is still awake and interested, I will be happy to talk about it at length. Okay. So second result. So like I was saying, we'll make an abstract algebraic observation. And from the observation, we'll get... So if you have a homomorphic cryptosystem over an abelian group, any abelian group, then we'll prove that if things work in an algebraic way, if you try to design a protocol for private database modification in an algebraic way, you're not going to be able to do so with better than trivial communication complexity. And we'll have a similar result for homomorphic peer. So I mean, already you've seen non-trivial homomorphic peer, though, in Kuchelev-Ostrovsky. So what do I mean by omega n lower bounds? What's going to happen is that we're going to consider the product of the user communication and the database communication. And the product of those two communication complexities will always be bounded below by n asymptotically, assuming that you build the protocol over an abelian group. And we'll also show, time permitting. So one of the main open questions in the keyword search protocols of OS and VSW, which you may have seen yesterday, one of the main open questions was, how do you do different types of queries? Why can't you do conjunctive queries? Well, I mean, we made a conjunctive query based on bilinear maps, but just in the basic scheme, we never had no conjunctive queries. So this same algebraic observation will also show us why you can't do conjunctive queries based on an abelian group. But there's always going to be, there's going to be different versions of these for different types of algebra. So with Binet, Goh, and Nassim, we have polynomials of total degree 2 that we can compute on ciphertext. And if you allow that algebraic structure, then this n becomes a square root of n. And more generally, if you can compute total degree t polynomials, the n becomes t root of n.
As a lower bound.
As a lower bound, yes. Right. But in almost all of these cases, we have matching upper bounds. Okay. So I think I have to get into the definition. So we're going to be talking about the algebraic observation now. So first I'm going to introduce characteristic vectors over a group. And for now I'm just going to be talking about characteristic, I know this is, so it's sort of characteristic vectors of a singleton set, but the elements come from a group. So let G be a group, and we'll call V and G to the N a characteristic vector if it's non-identity in exactly one location. So it's sort of the characteristic vector of a singleton set. Okay, so now this will be pretty much the only definition we need in our algebraic observation. So let V equal to a complete set of such vectors. And what I mean by complete set, I mean that for every I in 1 to n, there is a vector in this collection that's non-identity in position I, and they're all characteristic vectors. Okay. What is the inherent communication involved in algebraic functions that generate characteristic vectors? I'm going to explain that in detail in a moment, but that's in English. That's the question. And then we're going to reduce these various algebraic versions of crypto computing protocols to this functionality. So, but I really want to talk about this first bullet to make sure that this is clear, because if it's not, then everything else will not make any sense. So for a minute, we'll be more abstract in the end, but consider this as sort of the natural case. So for generating characteristic vectors in an algebraic way, what I'm going to ask for is some function, and for now say G is a group. So it's a function from m group elements to n group elements that's algebraic. Okay, so already, what do I mean by algebraic? So the thing that I'm trying to model is, what can I compute given an array of ciphertexts in a homomorphic cryptosystem? Well, I mean, all you're guaranteed to be able to do is the group operation. So if this is, say, an abelian group, what's the most arbitrary thing I can compute given m encrypted values in the system? Well, I can just use the z-module action and the group action, or I mean the group operation, and it'll all amount to a linear function. I'll have some number of the first variable plus some number of the second variable and so on, plus maybe some constant or something. But I mean, I have this very well formalized, in my opinion, in the paper. But it's too much work. And we're not going to need the full generality of the definition. We'll basically be talking about abelian groups anyway. So this is what I mean by algebraic function, more or less. Okay. So I want there to be some algebraic function from Gm to Gn, such that for every I in 1 through n, there's some input that gives me the nth characteristic vector. So that's the type of thing that we're going to be reasoning about. And we'll show that over an abelian group, g to the m has to be very large. Okay. So here's the algebraic observation. So we're going to make it as abstract as possible, but I think it's the right level of abstraction. It'll capture the things that we want to talk about nicely. It'll be easier to reason about. And it'll make the proofs go better too. Okay, so let A and G just be any abelian groups. And instead of G to the M, I'm replacing G to the M just with some abelian group. So now suppose that it's a map, that the capital F is a map from A to G to the N. That's an affine group map. By affine, I mean it's a homomorphism plus some constant in G to the N. Okay. And as I was just talking about, over abelian groups, this represents pretty much all you can think of doing with homomorphic encryption. Okay, so the theorem is, or the observation, whatever you'd like to call it, is if V being a complete set of characteristic vectors over a group, if it's contained in the image of this affine map, then A is necessarily very large. So A takes omega n bits to represent a single element. Initially, it sort of looks like linear algebra or something. I mean, it's definitely not linear algebra, but you see G to the M and a map to G to the N, and it might be a natural approach to the problem. Might be maybe we can show that M is somehow related to N, and everything goes well. I mean, if it was linear algebra, you'd be exactly right, and this would be pretty easy to do. But just to sort of illustrate the irrelevance of M, we can build such a function that goes from G to G to the N with M equal to 1. So we would just communicate a single group element and apply some function and get the right vector. So here's an example of that. So. But then, this is actually pretty illustrative, I think. Okay, so let capital N be the product of n, little n, distinct primes. And let your group just be cyclic of order capital N. Okay, then define integers little zi. That's the product of all the primes, except you're going to leave out the ith prime. Okay, so what does that get us? Well, what is zi squared mod capital N? Well, it still leaves out the ith prime, so it can't be 0 mod n. And what happens if I multiply two different ones? Well, it certainly covers up all the primes, and it is 0 mod n. So I could define just a homomorphism from G to the n by, you know, the formula. Yeah, I just take all these integers and multiply by the variables. That's what I get for each component. And this will be exactly the function I want. It'll give me the ability to generate all a complete set of characteristic vectors inside Gn. Okay. Okay. So, well, there's a lot of other bad ideas that I don't really want to talk about. But I mean, I don't have time for that slide. Sorry. So anyway, the sort of linear algebra, the naive thing about looking at M, that doesn't seem to be the right approach. I mean, we've already seen him doesn't have a whole lot to do with anything. So I think the right approach that worked pretty well is to just, we'll stay abstract, we'll analyze it in an abstract way, and that'll have a lot of advantages. I mean, we could try to formulate some relationship between him and the order of the group, but if you do things like that, it's going to be limited. And if you stay abstract, you're going to get that result anyway, and possibly more. So algebraically, the abstract approach will give us something stronger. It'll take care of all of our typical cases, but it'll actually take care of a lot more things. So, I mean, there's a lot of different algebraic maps that what we prove will cover that absolutely don't come from group formulas. So this is, I think, the way to go. Okay, so here's the beginnings of our abstract approach. So let R just be a finite ring with identity and M be a unitary R module. And then, so this is how we're gonna analyze our affine maps. Okay, so if omega is a collection of k elements of the module, and omega prime is the same elements only translated by some fixed element in the module, then how different can the module or abelian group that's generated by omega prime be in size from the one generated by omega? And the answer is not very different. It can at most blow up by a factor of the size of the ring. Okay, so yeah, so one thing to recall, every finite abelian group is a finite R module, where R is some integer that serves as like a characteristic for the group, where you add something to itself that many times and it's zero. In particular, the order of the group always works. The proof of the lemma, I don't think we'll have time for it. It's really easy, though. It's pretty straightforward. Okay, so, and then here's the proof of the theorem, at least the idea. So again, V is our complete set of characteristic vectors over a group. You know V is huge already, but I mean, so what was the structure of V? V had all of these identity, 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 something that's not identity, and it had that in every space. So what's the size of the module or the abelian group generated by V? Well, it's a product of n non-trivial cyclic subgroups. It's exponential in size for sure, even if all of them had order 2. So what we're going to do, but the problem is we don't know that it's a Z mod A module. We don't know a whole lot about it. But we'll use some basic stuff to show that it is a Z mod A module, and so will everything else be. And then we'll be able to apply the lemma without much trouble. Let me go through this quickly for now. We can come back to this. It's really pretty basic, but I think it might be boring at the moment. We'll show that everything has order dividing the order of A, and so here's the point. Here's what happens eventually. V prime was going to be the image of the homomorphism part of the affine map, and V is going to be something we know that's in the image of the whole affine map. We'll show everything has all the elements have order dividing order A. There's Z mod order A modules. And then we can just apply the lemma and get the following. Okay, so we have like a sharp bound by n over 2 bits. It takes at least n over 2 bits to represent an element of A.
Can you remind me of the full statement of the theorem?
Yes, for sure.
So you can just
write
it in the middle.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Okay, so so now we'll get to the hopefully more interesting things, the consequences. Okay, so over an abelian group, we'll show algebraic private modification of an encrypted database. If you use homomorphic encryption over an abelian group, you're not going to be able to do this in a non-trivial way. Again, under the algebraic assumptions. And for homomorphic pure protocols that work over the algebra of an abelian group, you're going to have, again, omega n complexity, where that's the product of the communication complexities between of the user complexity and the database's query response complexity. And then also, there's another application is the impossibility of a conjunctive query in the keyword search of OS and BSW. This is actually, I think, a good example. I hope I have time for it. It really illustrates what I think is the main utility of this work. Okay, and again, I've been alluding to this all along, but we're also going to talk about crypto systems that preserve polynomials of some bounded total degree. And when you allow that as your algebraic structure, then you have all these same bounds, more or less, with t root of n instead of n. In terms of conjunctive queries, if I have bilinear maps, I can do a conjunction of two terms. And if I have t-linear maps, I can do a conjunction of t terms, but not more. Okay, so one more time. We'll run through these things, and we'll show how the various protocols, how I can turn algebraic versions of these protocols into something that algebraically generates characteristic vectors, and then apply our algebraic observation. So suppose I had an algebraic protocol for private database modification. So I'm going to send some objects in a, for now, say it's an abelian group. So this collection of group elements represents the specification for how to change the database at bit I. Okay, then the database takes these elements in and computes some algebraic function. That's a function of the database elements and the modification description, and maybe some of his own inputs, and comes up with a new database that's different in exactly one position from the previous database. And the point was, if we could do this all with an abelian group, then if we had a crypto system over that abelian group, we'd have a protocol for it that preserves privacy. Okay, so why does an algebraic way to do this give me an algebraic way to make characteristic vectors? Well, it's pretty straightforward. Just let X be a database that's completely identity elements, and then apply the protocol, and that's it. So if I apply the modification function to the database X, which is all identities, and some description that's supposed to change the ith position and some other constants from the database, then I get X prime, which is exactly a characteristic vector. So if I did it in an algebraic way, then the algebra already right there is performing the thing that I said it can't perform. Okay.
But I'm sorry, how do you modify things? You have the restriction on the way you modify it, you just multiply it by group elements or not?
Exactly. So the restriction is I can just use abelian group formulas.
But you can do it for every cell location, you can do something totally different.
Yes. Yeah, you can do whatever you want to each cell, but it all has to amount to algebraic operations. That's the idea. It'll be more general. Like, I mean, the theorem is a little more general. There's a lot of things in there that are not algebraic formulas. But I mean, I don't know how to compute those on ciphertext anyway, so I don't know how. Well, I'll talk about that in a moment. Okay. To my knowledge, there's a protocol for this based on bilinear maps that has square root complexity. But that it works in an algebraic way, and I'll show in a moment that in an algebraic way that's the best you can do. But as far as I know, there's no way to do this. No one has a way to do this without bilinear maps in a non-trivial manner. Rafi thought of something using peer protocols to shuffle things around and then make a change and then shuffle them back. But the problem is the database blows up every time you change something, so it doesn't quite fit the model. Anyway, Anyway, this is, I'm not saying that you can't do this at all, but I'm saying you can't do it in an algebraic way, which is a very natural way to usually attack these kinds of things. And for this case, I don't actually have a solution that's not bilinear maps. Okay, homomorphic pure protocols. So here, we have a couple examples already. And again, we're going to be, we're going to look at everything algebraic. So the query is some collection of algebraic elements. The database is algebraic elements. And then for every database, there's some function, you know, parameterized by the database somehow, that takes in a query and some other constants perhaps, and produces homomorphic encryptions of the database elements. And so examples of this were, well, there's a lot of examples of this, but one example is just the original Kuchlevich-Ostrowski, and then there's another one in Banego and Nassim. Okay, so why does homomorphic peer, why does that give you the ability to make characteristic vectors? So for a minute think about the Banego and Nassim homomorphic peer protocol, which returns just an encryption of a single element. And then it's pretty easy to see. So now if B is some complete set of characteristic vectors, we'll just define databases by the characteristic vectors. And then if you have a query QI for position I, then if I just, you know, line up, I just use the modification function for database 1 and 2 and 3 on query I, I'll get something non-identity in position I. Okay, so that's it. But I also mentioned Kuchlevich-Ostrowski as an example of homomorphic peer. So our bounds are, you need to do something you need to extend this algebraic result a little bit in order to cover that. So what happens if there's non-singleton query returns? Well, we can prove without too much trouble the more general algebraic claim, and then we'll have just apply it the same way. Well, it's a little bit of an exercise, but we'll see if I have time. So let Bn be a complete set of characteristic vectors, except now they're not of singleton sets. Now the characteristic vectors are of sets just bounded by some positive function Wn. So every characteristic vector is non-identity in up to Wn locations. Then it's not hard to prove that if that type of set of characteristic vectors is a subset of an affine map over an abelian group, then you have that the size in A, the representation of elements of A, is bounded below by n divided by Wn. So you apply it to, how do you apply it to Kuchlevich-Ostrowski? I wrote it out, but it's a pretty straightforward exercise. Just sort of sum everything up to get your elements. Okay, I've been alluding to this the whole time, that we can do everything on other types of cryptosystems, but I wanted to at some point give you at least a formal statement. So I mean, there has been a lot of bilinear maps in cryptography lately, and I mean, there should be. It gets you the extra algebraic structure, gives you the ability to compute a lot more things. It's not complete, obviously, but it gives you the ability to a lot more. Okay, so we're going to generalize our algebraic result to polynomials of total degree bounded by some constant t. Okay, so what does that look like? So let R just be any finite ring. In this case, it doesn't have to be commutative or identity elements or anything. Be very unpleasant. Let V be a complete set of characteristic vectors over the abelian group R plus, just defined in the exact same way as before. Okay, so now what are we going to use for algebraic function when you have this additional structure? Well, it's break it down into component functions, and each component function, I'm saying, is a polynomial of degree bounded, of total degree less than or equal to t. So you don't need affineness because there are already polynomials that are constant terms. Okay, so now if V is a subset of the image of this kind of map, what we can show is that the t root of log of the size of R times M, that's bounded below by t root of n. And well, I think the formula makes a lot of sense, and it's nice when things make sense. So you can see it says sort of the way to make the most use out of your polynomials of degree t is to have as small a ring as possible and use as many variables as possible. Otherwise, I mean, the bigger the ring is, the less you're going to accomplish with your polynomials. Anyway, so we can use this corollary, which is actually really easy to prove. Actually, this is so easy, I should probably sketch it. It's really simple. So the proof idea is just count the monomials in an invariable polynomial of total degree t. Well, there's O of n to the t of them. Okay, so now simulate that polynomial with just a degree one polynomial that has a whole bunch of variables. So I can get some degree one polynomial with tons and tons of variables that accomplishes the same behavior. It accomplishes the same behavior as the multivariate polynomial. And now I'm already in the situation of abelian groups with R plus, and I can just apply the original result. Okay, right, and that'll lead to, that I've been alluding to the whole time, it'll give you similar lower bounds, just replacing n with t root of n. Okay, right, well, we all did all this under algebraic assumptions, and it seems sort of rigid. But in some crypto computing settings, I think it's actually pretty appropriate. But anyway, from an algebraic point of view, they're actually pretty general. When you're given homomorphic encryptions of elements, this sort of encapsulates all the algebraic things you can do and some things that you can't do. So I mean, even if I had the ability to somehow compute endomorphisms of G on ciphertext, and put that in my formulas. My formulas would get much more complicated, but I would still be able to prove the same result. Endomorphisms don't come from formulas in general. This is additional things. Or maybe you would think that if I could somehow map crypto system to another crypto system, then maybe I could communicate encryptions of some elements in a small group, and then map them over to another crypto system where the elements are bigger. Maybe that would get me somewhere. Well, again, if it all adds up to an affine map, then you can't. Okay, so perspective. What I really hope that this accomplishes is just saves people some time, really. I think that's the main thing to take away from it. So if you have some crypto computing function in mind that you want to design and it's not out there at the moment, This work gives you sort of a simple test you can apply. Is there a way that I can manipulate this protocol to give me characteristic vectors? If the answer is yes, then it doesn't tell you that you can't do it, but what it does tell you is there's a whole class of ways in which you can't do it, and that I hope will save a lot of time. I mean, every single one of the examples that I've talked about so far have been things that in my very short time studying cryptography, I've run into myself, and I've pounded my head against the wall trying to make conjunctive queries for I don't know how many months. If I'd known this, it's pretty easy to equate them, and it could have saved me a lot of time. So anyway, I hope that's the main point, is I hope it saves you some time. But there are situations in which it is a relatively strong absolute lower bound, and that's if you want to build some crypto computing function. And you want to use that protocol as a subroutine in some bigger crypto computing function, then the protocol might need output that has some algebraic value that you can keep on so that you can continue the computation. And I think when that's the scenario, then the bounds here are much, much stronger. It's one thing to do, there's lots of non-algebraic things you can do. I mean, you can build peer from any homomorphic encryption on an abelian group. You just use some map that takes the ciphertext into integers and reapply with the Z module action. But that destroyed all of the algebra. So anyway, it's hard for me to think of some non-algebraic way to build crazy protocols that come out with something that has algebraic value. That's the point. So that's when I think this is especially useful. Well, there was this thing at the beginning that wasn't discussed in much detail about, you know, competing with simple non-abelian groups. And I think the only thing to take away from that result is that it's pretty hard to make a crypto system over a non-Abelian group. So, yeah. Okay, that's about the end of the talk. But I think if there's time, I think the best, I think what might be the most interesting is to finish my last example about conjunctive queries with the keyword search. I think that might be the most interesting thing to people. But I don't know, I'll open it up to questions, I guess, at the moment.
5 more minutes.
5 more minutes? Okay. Well, yeah, I think, how did a lot of people go to the to Rafi's talk on, nobody will answer that.
Don't
answer that. Okay, sorry, inappropriate. Yeah, but I think that's an interesting example. So I think I'll talk about that just on the board. Originally, Rafi's talk was scheduled for after this talk, and then I didn't think many people would have read my paper, so I didn't include it as a main result. But now, since he just gave the talk a day ago, maybe it is a good thing to include. Yeah, because it was sort of like the main open-ended thing in that work was how do I do conjunctive queries. So is it already obvious to anyone why that? Let's keep it non-interactive, and I'll just write on the board. No. This is. Oh yeah, you can hear it off. Thanks. Remember in the keyword search, the design for the protocol was you're given some dictionary of words, and to each word you associate some encrypted value. And if the word is a keyword that you want to search for, you put an identity element. If the word is something that you do want to search for, you put some non-identity element, an encryption of non-identity. And then, how do you process a document? You gather up the collection of distinct words in the document, and you just sort of combine all of these guys with the group operation, and, depending on the size, depending on sort of like the characteristic, I guess I'll call it, of the group, if it's bigger than the dictionary, then you're all set. What you get will be a non-identity element exactly when one or more keywords was present in the document. Okay, so why was it important to use homomorphic encryption at this stage? Well, after I've determined whether or not this is a keyword or not, I need to use the value to continue further in this crypto computation. I needed to use this encryption of an identity or non-identity to be able to write things into the buffer. So you use this value, which is either this identity or non-identity, based on whether or not you had a matching document, and then you're going to use that to write into the buffer. If you didn't see Rafi's talk, this might not make a whole lot of sense, but I'll get to the point. Okay, so how can I change this protocol into something that does characteristic vectors? Okay, well, here's the idea. So just look at all. Suppose that I did have a conjunctive query, and look at all pairs of words. So we're going to index our vector. It's going to be in G to a size of the dictionary. And we'll have this O will end as well. So we can get a list of pairs of distinct words. Okay, now if I had some algebraic way to do conjunctive queries, what it would amount to is I would be performing some algebraic computation on this dictionary of size n. And I'd be combining these homomorphic encryptions, and I would get out a non-identity element exactly when both words were present, and if that wasn't the case, then I would always get identity element. Okay, so just sort of index your vectors by all pairs of words, and now to generate a characteristic vector at position for word I or j, I just send a dictionary that searches for word I and word j in a conjunctive way, and now that's it. Now I've produced an order n squared characteristic vector from this dictionary, which served as the description, which was only of size n. So then that's basically why you can't do conjunctive queries. Again, it's not absolute. Maybe there's some other crazy way to do it, but this thing really seems to demand an algebraic approach, and the algebraic approach won't work. And again, you can do the same thing for bilinear maps. If I use bilinear maps, I can do one conjunction, but I can't do more. Because if I did, it would give me the ability to make characteristic vectors of size n cubed out of something of size n.